hang about. It's our weekly catch-up with the National Party's Denise Lee.
Hi, Denise.
Hi, Laura.
How are you going today?
Going well. It's a bit muggy in Auckland, but we are surviving.
Yeah, we're pushing through. Same over here at the studio. So I'm just going to jump straight into it.
All right, go for it.
News topic of the week, kind of investigations into National Party donations have come back up. This has kind of acted as a platform for both Simon Bridges and Jamie Lee Ross to kind of state their case on foreign donations. And I'm curious what you think about that.
Well, I mean, we've always been open to any discussion on foreign donations. If the country and all political parties think that there's space to talk about it, then we will. We're very happy to be part of that conversation. As far as the SFO investigation goes, we were unaware and we're still unaware of what the scope of that is. It's pretty normal for police who feel that they might not have a mandate and things to hand them on. So we'll cooperate fully, but we've got not much knowledge at this point of the scope, what it involves, and where it's going.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, like, with Jamie Lee Ross, he's forcing a vote amongst MPs even on the subject. So I'm curious which way you would fall on that matter.
On the SFO investigation?
So on banning foreign donations.
Yeah, well, look, I want to hear the arguments I want to hear what the parameters are. So there is a lot of areas where you could ring fence, isolate, ban. To be honest, especially as a new MP, I'm not sure where the scope of the discussion's going. So I wouldn't want to comment until I know where the entire framework will be, Laura.
Mm. If it does come out that there has been something that compromises the Electoral Act in terms of Simon Bridges and this investigation, what do you think the follow-up decision will be to that?
Well, I mean, the electoral law, as we know it, is pretty clear. Mm. So all I'd say is that we'll be investigating fully with any entity that wants to look at a breach of that. And I think the law is quite clear on what the results of a breach are too. So, look, I can't comment, Laura, to be honest, especially in this particular case, because it's a matter for the SFO and police, and we're cooperating fully. But to be honest, we're also focused on lots of other things that are happening in the country, and capital gains tax. I think we've touched on that every single week, haven't we?
Yep.
Are we going to touch on that today, by the way? Because it's been dominating for such a long time.
I'm just trying to not touch on it this week, honestly.
I don't know, you might not be.
I don't think I can yell about capital gains anymore.
Yeah, no, it's certainly the buzzword, but for good reason, right? It's scaring a lot of people, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely. So I will shift on to the latest bill to overall drug laws. So the Misuse of Drugs Amendment Bill, some national MPs have come out in opposition. Can you tell me a bit about why there is an opposition to this bill?
So what it does is classifying two types of synthetic cannabis as Class A drugs, and we support that. And we really think that's a good idea. And in fact, one of our MPs, Simeon Brown, had a private member's bill increasing penalties if you supply those drugs. We've had to put that on hold because we're not sure whether we're getting support for that, and we should be. But the bill goes much further than that. So basically, what we're saying is that it'd bring in decriminalisation by stealth. And so we're not going to support the bill. It's unprecedented change to direct police not to prosecute drug offenders. So you can have someone who can smoke pee and they're not going to be charged. So it's fundamentally changing our drug laws, and it's been done by stealth. So we're really concerned about and the one hand saying, yep, let's classify a couple types of synthetic cannabis as Class A, and on the other hand, giving loads of discretion to police on all drugs. It doesn't stack up.
Mm. I am curious about the wording. So it says, affirm police discretion over whether to charge people with possession. What do you think that actually looks like?
Well, we don't know. So that's the million-dollar question. We don't know what that would look like in terms of discretion used or not used. It's too loose. The framework isn't right, and it certainly doesn't. If the basic premise is we need to protect people from harmful substances, then why are we sort of by a weird backdoor inside a bill that's supposedly trying to lock down into Class A category a couple of drugs? Why are we then loosening in a very unclear framework police discretion?
I also, there's lots of interesting things that have happened around the world in terms of drug use over this time, and there's a lot of different theories on it. So we have Canada that has implemented safe places for people to use drugs, with people standing by to prevent overdoses, greater emphasis on rehabilitation. And in Portugal, we had drug use decriminalized, which saw a radical impact on the rate of use. So is it possible at all that in New Zealand, actual criminalization of drug use is producing more harm than good?
No, look, I wouldn't say that at all, Laura. I think, first of all, if you're going to have any sort of decriminalisation or legalisation for that matter, then one of the first things you've got to look at is new investment in addiction and mental health sides of things. And we haven't had any, if we just tie it back to this current misuse of drugs bill, we haven't had any indication at all from the government that they're going to beef up that side of things. And when you get on to, let's just say legalising recreational marijuana, there's a heap of questions that need to be really locked down before I think we even have the discussion, let alone a decision. How will a market operate? If you're going to legalise it, how will it operate? Will it be commercially available? Who's able to sell it? Is it going to be big corporations or local not-for-profits? I mean, there's all sorts of questions. And we're not seeing any of what I'll call the grunt work by the government. In fact, all we're seeing is the Prime Minister's referendum for next year. Are we even going to have a bill leading up to the referendum, legislation in Parliament? Just so many unanswered and, quite frankly, lazy approach to these really, as you say, big discussions.
Absolutely. I'm going to shift on to the build-to-rent scheme that Phil Twyford is speculating
on. Yeah, that's an interesting one.
I find it incredibly interesting. I mean, of course, I couldn't keep like a housing issue out of the subject, could I? But I'm curious what you think about this idea.
So, look, I don't think it's a bad idea, especially if it obviously increases the supply of rental accommodation. That's a good thing. We've got a massive public housing wait list. In fact, the biggest we've ever had, 11,000 households. But the problem that I do have with it, and look, I think it's worth exploring. It's not a bad idea, as I said. But the problem is you've got that on the minister, this on the one hand, but on the other hand, making things a little bit harder for landlords. So I'm going to do it, Laura. Here comes the capital gains.
Oh. Okay, so here we go.
You've got the government looking at imposing a capital gains tax. Are mum and dad landlords going to have the confidence to stick around in the market? You've got the bright line test extended, and then you've got stuff around bathroom fans and range hood fans and so on, and windows. So there are extra measures that are coming, and we know that the average rent is going up. So how does this all work? Well, on the one hand, build-to-rent schemes, let's explore that idea, but on the other hand, with the existing rental supply, making it harder.
Well, in terms of the existing rental supply, you kind of think about more properties being on the market, decreasing the rental prices, which I think is something that we would hope across the board, because our rental market is massively high. Isn't this potentially a positive then?
No, I totally agree. Totally agree. So I think it's not a bad idea. It's an idea worth exploring, but you can't do that and at the same time make it harder on the existing supply. We all need a band together for solutions, not making it tougher. Because obviously a build-to-rent scheme, by the time that gets off the ground, should it do so? Should we see real merit in it? And I think that there is some merit in it. What's happening in the meantime with policies like CGT, with, increasing the technical stuff around bathroom fans and so on and so on. All good, but it stacks up, and it's why in Auckland we've seen a $40 rise in rents, $40 per week rise in rents. And that's a fact.
I think about renting is such an unfriendly landscape, I think, for a lot of people. And Phil is kind of saying that he's wanting to make renting a respectable option for people looking to be renting for the rest of their lives, potentially. The thing about renting is it doesn't really produce any value for an individual who is renting. So it's not an investment, and you can't sell it later down the line. So I think for a lot of people, it doesn't seem like it's a sustainable option in terms of retiring later down the line. So is that something we should be concerned about?
Well, internationally, long-term rental tenure it exists and is actually quite successful. So we do have a love affair with owning properties, and I still think it's the right thing that we help Kiwis increase home ownership. But there is scope for looking at long-term rental that's a secure tenure. You know you can stay. In some instances, you can even modify the place that you are long-term renting. So there's scope for... I agree with you that sometimes we see the landscape is unfriendly, and maybe we do need to look at other options. But I'll just go back to, sorry to beat that drum again, Laura, but if you're making the existing supply really unfriendly, you'll find that, regular mum and dad landlords are just going to get out of the market, and we're going to have a whole lot harder time in our current housing market or conditions to get ahead. In fact, people will start to go backwards because rent prices will just be driven up.
Gonna shift on to my last question, as usual, the personal one. And as I mentioned to you earlier, I am sick and I've been on bed rest for the last few days. So Denise, as my guru in a sense, do you have any special cures for the common cold?
For the common cold?
Common cold.
So I'm not like my grandma and down the lemon juice. I just think that actually makes things worse, because it kind of, don't you think that produces more phlegm? I'm getting too personal here, aren't I? So my best cure for the common cold would be bring back pseudoephedrine to the chemist. No, it's not that. Actually, you're stumping me. Because I had a cold 2 weeks ago. What did I do? You know what? I toughed it out. I'm going to sound hardcore. I toughed it out. I knew that if I was going to take just, the lem sips or the whatever, that it would just delay things. So I just toughed it out. And I felt sorry for myself for about 48 hours. And then I just went out and infected everyone else.
Oh, Joyce. Well, we'll be talking with you next week, Denise, and I will be toughing it out till then.
I didn't help you at all, did I?
It's okay. I'm going to keep going.
Okay.
See you, Denise.
See ya. Bye, Laura.
The National Party's Denise Lee on 95 BFM.